What's up, everyone? Okay, I just want to have a little catching up to do. Is remember we spent after we did the mitzvah to put forth the four death penalties, right? We got a bit of a tangent on sakana, right? Things that are dangerous. So if the Gemara makes a statement, chamira sakanta meisura, we treat things that are forbidden because of a sakana with more restrictions than we treat actual iser. But the fact though is that that is not borne out clearly. Let's say in Yoredeya, where we are much more lenient with issues, let's say, regarding fish and meat than we are with issues regarding milk and meat, right? Milk and meat is iser. Fish and meat is sakana, right? But that could be for a good reason. In the Gemara that we did last time, that saw that that we where we saw the prohibition of eating fish and meat together, was one of two opinions, because there was a second opinion that says there's nothing wrong with fish and meat together. All right. But when it comes to sakana, we want to be careful. We want to be, cover every base. Right. So here, I was just that day, I was learning a Gemara in Erevin that said that we're lenient in a camp of soldiers that has an encampment, and we're lenient with certain issues in halacha. They don't need a more sophisticated eruv, and they have certain leniencies more with a with their chatzeros than with their tumim. But we one of the leniencies is netilas yadayim. They don't have to go look for water from their encampment in order to eat bread. So then the Gemara says, that's in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, we're lenient when it comes to Mayim Rishonim, but we're not lenient when it comes to Mayim Achronim. Which is ironic, because there are many Jews, especially German Jews, who take their minhagim mostly from the Balei HaTosfos. And there are many, many German Jews who follow what Tosfos says in the Gemara that says that we're not makpid with Mayim Achronim so much anymore. Right? So in order to fully understand that, the Minchas Chinuch discussed what is the reason for Mayim Achronim is because of the salt that you used to pick up with your fingers and you'd mix it on your food. And it was called Melech Sodomis. And then if you touch your eyes, it'll be harmful, right? So it's not a question that now most of us eat with a fork and we have salt shakers, right? So how many of you are actually touching the salt when you eat? Even on Shabbos, you dip the challah in the salt from the table, right? But that's not a reason to undo a gzeira. What's the real reason? The same reason we're not makpid on Mayim Achronim today is the same reason we're not makpid on Gilui today, on the uncovered wine, milk, and water. Because the very essence, the very start, the very foundation of these gzeros for sakana, the foundation doesn't exist. It's not that we use forks and salt shakers. We don't have Melech Sodomis anymore. Okay? Possibly the things that come closest might be the kosher salt, the thick salt. But we don't have Melech Sodomis anymore, so there's no reason to continue the gzeira. And we don't have snakes where we live, so there's no need to continue that gzeira. Okay? All right, and if you say, I see lots of goyim eating fish and meat, and I don't, and if goyim eat milk and meat, all right, that's not their mitzvah. But if fish and meat is a sakana, so it should manifest itself on people who violate it. Why are more people getting skin disorders? So the answer to that is that, look, the Torah speaks about tzara'as also. We don't see that either. Tzara'as may be a spiritual malady that attacks the soul, just the same way that eating fish and meat might do. I say this because most of these sakanos that the Gemara talks about, like not doing a bris if it's a cloudy day, most of these sakanos are no longer in vogue. But the fish and the meat, I think, is pretty, people are very mockered, right? Right? I mean, there's some, I think there's a Worcestershire sauce that the OU writes, OU fish. Right? Now, the OU does not have to put down OU fish on a can of sardines or a can of tuna fish, right? It's quite obvious not to eat that with meat. Okay? Although I did buy a container of mixed nuts recently, and very prominently on the front of the container, it said, allergy warning, this product contains tree nuts. Okay. So, all right. I don't know. Go figure. All right. So that's the, so the Gemara says that if you are in an encampment, you can be lenient when it comes to Mayim Rishonim, the washing before you eat bread, but not on the Mayim Achronim, because washing before you eat bread is a matter of Isser, a matter of Tumah. Washing after you eat bread is, after the meal, is a matter not of Isser, but of Sakana. Okay, so you see a real live case where the Gemara is more Machmir on Sakana than it is on Isser. Okay? All right, that's all I'm going to say about that. Now let's finish up our discussion that we also started last week on Kibbud Av Va'em. Okay? All right, the Chinuch, we're up to number 10, which is on page Resh Mem Gimel. Resh Mem Gimel. Interesting thing. Have you ever heard of the idea of a child that his bar mitzvah to do kapara for the averos he committed before he was bar mitzvah? So you're going to say, why would he have to? Why would a girl who turns 12 have to atone for anything she did even the day before she turns 12? That's not her cheshbon, that's her parents' cheshbon. Right? And yet there is such a situation. There are such minhagim where the child, in the very least, the child atones for the sins of not obeying his parents. Get it? Because obeying parents is not tolui in bar or bas mitzvah. Obeying parents is tolui in being old enough to recognize the hodah we owe our parents and to act accordingly. And if we don't, we're sinning. We need kapara. Everything a child does before then is a din of chinuch. It's to learn how to be useful, how to make use of this behavior after you become a bar onshin. That mitzvah of chinuch is upon the parents. Okay, right. So number 10 asks the question, V'hinei belav hazeh imavar chutz mima shavar al alav avar gamkein ba'aseh to kibud avayim. All right, I'm not sure that's necessarily, I guess you want to say that the two are intertwined. I'm sure he knows the Gemara I'm about to cite, where the Gemara Rashi mentions it in Parshas Kedoshim. He says that ezehu kavod, if you look at all the things the Gemara says that we need to do to fulfill the mitzvah of kaberes avicha besimecha, they are things that we do. Take them out, bring them in, feed them, clothe them, things that we associate that they did for us when we were very young. But these are things, if necessary, that we have to do in order to fulfill kavod. Ezehu yira are the things we don't do. Don't contradict them, don't sit in their seat, don't call them by their first name. So it's things like that. And on that, a parent is allowed to be mochel on kavod. Okay? parent is even allowed to be mochel on the din of chabura, especially if it's for medicinal purposes. Or a parent can play contact sports with his child, right? They're playing basketball, and the parent has to say before they start playing, listen, in case you go up for a rebound and you scratch me or you draw blood or you give me a bloody nose, I'm mochel you. So here he says that whatever the avera was, because there's an avera, there's a mitzvah lo saseh and the mitzvah saseh. Well, the inyan tshuva kechol lav sheyesh bo misas beizdin, de'ein tshuva mechaperes velo im yom kippurim rak yisurim emarkim. Oh wow! So if a child actually drew blood on a parent, there's no tshuva in this world without Yisurim. Even Yom Kippur? Yeah. Even Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur does not atone for every single offense. No, you say you start with a clean slate. No. Some clean slates need some tshuva. And some need a kapara. Okay. One very famous sacrifice that the Yom Kippur atones is called an Asham Talui. Asham Talui. If you're not sure if you did something in Avera that requires an Asham, so when you pass Yom Kippur, you don't have to bring that korban anymore. Okay? Well, the Inyan Tshuva, Kechol Lav, Sheish Bo Mises Beis Din, like any other Lav that has Mises Beis Din. Right? Is that the wind out there that I hear? You hear it too? Very windy outside? No? Okay. All right, so if you see it at a bar mitzvah or at a bas mitzvah party where the child is called upon to beg forgiveness of anything they did when they were younger. That's the chinuch makes reference to this. You know that at the age of 13, the minhag is that when the boy gets his bar mitzvah, and we did this for all four of our daughters, that at their bar mitzvah party, whatever, you know, they said the Dvar Torah. So my wife and I both got up and we said, Baruch Sheptarani Me'onsho Shalzeh. You say, without shame of malchus. Say, blessed art thou, Lord of God, King of the universe, who has absolved us of the sins of this child. Now, it's not quite clear what even that means. It's not found in the Gemara. It's found in Medrash Rabbah. The Parshas told us. I'm not sure even what it means. The Magen Avraham suggests that it means, oh, thank God our child is no longer wearing the albatross across its neck of our sins. Right? They no longer, now they're on their own. Most people understand it the opposite. Most people understand that the father was going to be punished for the child's sins, not vice versa. So Baruch Sheptarani, Me'on Shir Shalzeh, now the child is on his own. I'm now thanking God that I'm no longer held responsible for his misdeeds. Okay, number 11, right? Number 11 asks an interesting question. The punishment for murder of any human being is chenek, right? Punishment for murdering any human being, right, is chenek. What's the punishment for beating a parent? Also chenek. Right? What's the punishment for killing a parent? Okay, so I'm sorry, I misspoke on one thing. The punishment for murder is hereg, not chenek. Hereg. Hereg means decapitation. The punishment for wounding a parent with intent to be malicious, that's chenek. So the punishment for killing a parent, is it going to be the same as the punishment for killing any other human being? Or is it going to be the punishment for causing a chabura on a parent? That's the Minchas Chinuch's question in number 11. So it depends, he says, on how they warned him. Because the Torah seems to treat wounding a parent like killing somebody. It's like committing murder. Right? He argues that the punishment for killing a parent should be no different than the punishment for wounding a parent. Right? Wouldn't you agree? Whether we drew blood or not. Okay. Anyway, this is, of course, this discussion is only according to Chachamim, not according to Rav Shimon. We can quibble about whether which one we think is correct. But what do you think is a more painful death? Decapitation or strangulation?
Strangulation.
Yeah, that's it. Because decapitation is momentary, right? Be strangled to death takes some time. The assumption is that the quicker the death, the more the haftal recha kamocha it is, right? Okay, so I think I've started with the chachamim. Skila srefa, hereg v'chenek. Chenek the Herod, yeah. Okay, so the number 12 of Minchas Chinuch is really going out on a limb. He asks the following two questions. Can a child who is a Kohen be the one who gives his mother the waters of Sota to drink? He's the Kohen in charge that day.
Oh.
And his mother comes in, accused by his father or her husband, whoever it may be, accused by her husband of unchaste behavior. He warns her not to be seen behind the closed door with another man. She is seen joking and laughing and going in the room with him willingly. And the person in charge to give the water that day is her son. Furthermore, what if this, that has to be a Kohen, but what happens if the son is a court-appointed lasher? And then his father comes in or his mother comes in to get Malkus that day. Can the son do that? What do you think? Or be the one that pushes him down the two stories.
I would think if there's someone else to do it, they'd let someone else do it.
Yeah, but he's operating not as the child, but as an official capacity, divorced from the relationship.
The Chinuch wants to mechalek between all of these and the Mesit. The Mesit. Mesit is the one who tries to convince other people to worship Avodah Zarah. Mesit u'Medeach. But he sides with Howard on this. I have to say that Howard says that this is part of the Kapara process. Right, it says that when we give Malkus to a person, it says V'hayayim bina kos ha-Rasha. You call this person, give the Rasha his Malkus, and then it says, but don't give him too many because then your brother will be shamed in front of you. Amazing. I mean, the same pasuk says smite the Rasha with the requisite amount of lashes, but not too many because then your brother will be ashamed. So Adrabba, this is the process whereby we try to bring back the person. Okay. Now, he even discusses what happens if a blind man hits his father. Is a blind man putter in mitzvahs? It's amazing what the kind of examples that the chinuch comes up with.
The putter from Lotasa?
No, he says we don't pask him. We pask him that he's
right. Mitzvahs. Right, yeah. But I understand, why would you ever have a mina that he wouldn't be? I thought he just parked it from certain lotas.
Well, he writes, look at number 13. Ach yesh poskim ki Rabbi Yehuda de potter u potter afilu milotase.
Really?
Ayin primagodim or chayim psicha kol elis. Usually we don't say that. We say that someone...
No, it doesn't. When the Rav Sheshit makes that famous statement about the party that he would throw if he was... Someone could show him that he had a chiyuv. I mean, so I always thought that meant process.
Yeah, but he doesn't... You know, Dafka says mitzvahs. If I may just... it was Rav Yosef.
No. Okay.
It sounds like it should be right. I mean, we differentiate by the Eved Knani, by the Isha, but you know, there's no way that someone can say, "Oh, I can just violate or that just mitzvahs don't pertain to him." Suma chashuv kemeis, and then he can eat on kosher food. But we don't pask in that way. But okay, last item that I put down here is Umasha Kosav Harava Machaber de Lav Zen Noheg Bechomakom Uvecholzman. Hainu Halav of Aloha Onesh, obviously. Okay, of course. This is kept at all times, at all places. We're not allowed to harm our parents, we're not allowed to chovel, we're not allowed to cause any damages like that. So he says that but it's the Onesh we don't do now. Kimisa's based in Noheges Rakvis Mancha Besa Mikdashayakayam. And the same is true for the mitzvah now we're segueing into, which is mitzvah memtes, which is called Dine Knossos. Okay. All right. This is mitzvah. Actually, Dine Knossos, what I put together with mitzvah Nun Aleph, I think I sent it out last week, right? Here it's Parshas Mishpatim starts to get into numerous examples of damages, torts, it's really Bava Kama material, numerous damages of tort law, okay? And when the Sefer Achinuch says that Dinei Knossos Bizman Hazeh Tzorech Beis Din Musmach, you need a Beis Din that has musmach straight from Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have that anymore. In order to hand out fines, right? So he says that it's up to the Beis Din to make sure, let's say, an animal gores. What has to be done? An animal gores and causes damage. An animal eats its neighbor's spinach, right? An animal while walking smashes some kalim. So who's got to make sure that's adjudicated? Obviously, someone's got to make a complaint. But who do you make the complaint to? The Beis Din, the owner of the ox. How do you complain? So it's true that we always prefer, as I often see here in America, to what's called settle out of court, right? Maybe you have to put things in writing so no one goes back on the settlement. But it's best if, someone goes over to the owner of this ox and says, you know, your ox has caused me some damage, right? And if we assume we're dealing with honest people who don't want to be, causing damages that they should be responsible for, that they don't take responsibility, right? Assuming we're dealing with upright people here. The point the Chinuch makes right away is that these rules are incumbent on the Beis Din. It's up to the Beis Din in every community to be sure that there is a vehicle where people can gain redress and they can feel that they have a place to go to air grievances. Okay. And that while it may be better to settle out of court, as they say it, every place has to have a system whereby they can get satisfaction. Now, since we don't have a musmach anymore, since we don't have smicha, the smicha has been broken, right? How do we fulfill the dinim of knasos today? Right? We just let everyone go scot-free. No one's going to watch their oxen then. We don't want to have a free-for-all. So it's the din, it's the incumbent on the community, the Beis Din, to have a system in place whereby people can air their grievances. But when it comes to a knas, now what is the definition of a knas? Knas is a fine. A knas is where someone is paying more than the damages that were caused. A knas tends to be fixed, right? A fixed type of punishment, like 30 shekel, or no matter what the value of the thing was, right? Okay. There's sometimes disputes whether chati nezek is a knas or mamon, right? Mamon, the courts in every community have the right to extract mamon. It's a regular Beis Din. I hold you guilty, I hold you innocent. So the regular Beis Din has that all the time. But a knas goes beyond that. Okay. So the nafka mina that the Minchas Chinuch spends most of the time in mitzvah number Nun Aleph is, since we don't have dine knasos anymore, and in the absence of such dinim, is it possible for someone to have satisfaction from what should be a knas today? Can I give you some quick examples? The most obvious example that comes to mind is kefil. Right? Kefil. Someone steals your property and is caught, they have to pay double what they stole. Okay. All right. When someone steals from me, I'd be happy to just retrieve what I lost. But okay. All right. Let's read where I put the checks. See, it's Yud Bet. Beila adinim shnikrim dine knasos. Kvar amarnu she'ein donin osam ela Beis Din asmuchim meretz Yisrael. I've already written that a knas can only be collected by a Beis Din of people who have a direct line to Moshe or Yahushua. That's called Beis Din smuchim. Uveretz Yisrael. And only in Israel. So we're not smuchim anymore. So it sounds from the words of the Sefer Chinuch that we have no more knasos today, ever. Okay. So the Minchas Chinuch says that that's a mistake. The Be'emes based in smuchim done in dini knasos afilu b'socha b'chutz laretz. Okay, if it's a based in smuchim, they can do dini knasos anybody they want.
Let the parties by themselves agree that the court will have the authority to impose a knas.
There's a lot of leeway if the parties themselves, because of Dina Demach, Hefker based in Hefker, parties themselves can go beyond the letter of the Choshen Mishpat law. He adds a caveat that in order for a Beis Din to be able to judge Dine Knossos, they have to have been appointed in Israel. Now, the section under this is really what makes up the bulk of the Minchas Chinuch's treatment in this chapter, which is, absent any fulfillment of the grievance of this person who has been, harmed by this ox or by this pit or whatever it is, right? Now, to be sure, with most damages, the payment is called mamon, not knas. If you damage my car, you don't get fined, you get assessed. How much damage you caused? It's not a fine, right? So, we gave some parameters of a fine before. Is if I steal $100 from you and I'm caught, right? So I have to pay $200. $100 is mamon and $100 is a fine. That's how we understand it. Okay. All right. So if I steal $100 from you, and I lie about it, and I'm caught, how much do I have to pay you? Only 100, because there's no knasos in Chutz Laretz. Okay. But, here's the big but. What happens if you, let's read it inside, Vim tafas hanizak ein motzi en miyado. If the aggrieved party grabs onto some property from the person who stole from him, now we can't just go around to anybody's property and start grabbing things and saying, "You hurt my ox, you hurt my my left hand, you hurt." No, there has to be something a little more fixed than that. Okay, but. The Chinuch says that if the aggrieved party decides, I'm going to gain some satisfaction by grabbing some of his property,
He doesn't mean that you can seize the property before there's been a judgment issued by the court, does he?
No, he does.
But you may be wrong.
Yeah, I know. And now the other guy becomes an aggrieved party. Or he's going to say, Lazim Zayin, let him be, because I know I owe it to him. It's a danger. There's a danger in that, listen, no, we're hoping we're dealing with decent people, because if it's not decent people, I can seize something from you anytime. I'm seizing this because I really do believe I deserve to have this, and you're not coming forth with it.
People can have disagreements even in good faith, in terms of what the amount was or what the terms of repayment was, unless it was, a shtar. It's kind of dangerous to not have a court judgment.
We've discussed there are five different options that often adjudicate a case where you say X and I say Y. I disagree with that, with what you think. So very often that's known as mamon hamutal b'safik. Right? something that is doubtful, so we usually say yachloku, famous sumchus, mamon amuto besafik yachloku. When I'm not sure who's supposed to have this money, so split it. Right? However, there are some other things. Like, you ever hear this? Yehi munach ad shiavo Eliyahu. Let this thing remain in escrow until Eliyahu comes. Wouldn't it be easier to split it? No. Because one of these guys is a liar. Why should the guy who really owns it only get half? Well, if you don't split it, he's going to get nothing. Yeah, but we don't want the sinner to be gaining here. Now, as Howard just said, it's very possible that the guy who's grabbing it, or the guy who thinks it's his, he really thinks it's his. Aren't we opening up a Pandora's box? Right? But there's still other interesting options that the judge has. One is shuda d'daini.
Right.
Shuda d'daini means that the judge just has a sense. He's tried 7,000 cases. He just knows. He can see this doesn't make sense. There's a lot of leeway in that. Then there's an interesting thing called kol da'alim gvar. You hear that? Kol da'alim gvar, which means let the judge just recuse himself and say, you know what, guys, you fight it out. There's nothing we can say about this. Right? This is where the court has exhausted every possible discussion about who actually owns this thing. And the court just says, all right, listen, guys, we toss it up. And the Ritva explains that it's likely that the one who really owns it is going to fight a lot harder to keep it.
Depends on resources.
Yeah, and physical strength maybe. But all things equal, he says that the person who really owns it is going to go out of his way. The other guy will hopefully say, brach, what do I need this tzara? Right? Of course, this says nothing about the person who really actually thinks he owns it when he doesn't really own it. We've had that, right? So we have these choices. We have yachloku, mumun hamatul b'safek yachloku. We have shuda d'daini. Or we have yehi munach ad shiavo Eliyahu, let it stay in escrow until Eliyahu comes and tells us who the real owner is. Then shuda d'daini, then kol da'alim gvar. Now, there's also in the beginning of Bava Metzia where both actually swear, and then they split. Tosfos asks, how can you cause two people to swear when you know one of them is lying? So Tosfos answers, that's true. If one said, I wove this garment, it's mine, and the other says, no, I wove the garment, and it's mine, and they're both holding on to it. Right? But if one says, I found it, and it's mine, and the other one says, I found it, and it's mine, they might both be telling the truth, as they understand it.
Memory is not, it's not a photo. It's not fixed. Memory is subject to get reprocessed. And, outside pressures come to bear, and other factors. I mean, memories become flawed. So they might generally think that, it's not because the person, he's not necessarily lying. Maybe that's on, mm-hmm. It may turn out that he's wrong. But this doesn't mean, because otherwise, anytime anyone puts up a defense, you have to say that they're lying.
And some people are so they have a disillusionment is that, they're able to convince themselves that it really is money. Okay? So here, let's read this. Let's see it inside. The Chinuch says, right at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, here we have this halacha. Right? Bayin sham b'ktzos ha-choshen. Sof sifkot and zayin. Shekosef to davka b'mamon. Ela she'in donin b'zman hazeh. Mikol makom chayav v'tzorach l'shalim l'tzei sidei shamayim. So when we say that someone has to pay in order to fulfill his his din with the Shamayim. You ever hear of that? In Bava Metzia, you have a lot of it. It's really, he is pater from the, there's a court, no court that would hold him guilty. Right? So he's guilty b'dei adam. But still, midin Shamayim, he's inherently liable. So if that's the case, then the damager is chayav, and the grieved party does have the right to grab something. Not more than the value of the fine for what he did, but something up to that value. Otherwise, where is his redress? Okay. So he says, Shekosav the Dafka Bamamam, Elashain Dunning Bismanazem, Mikomakom, Chayav, Vitzorech Lishalim, Letzeis Yidei Shamayim. Right? So if he has to fulfill his din with the Shamayim, it means he actually owes the money, even though a court can't extract it from him. Right? Okay, examples of knas are paying double, paying four and five for the sheep and the goat and the bull. Okay. Avol knas gozar akasuv diyar shi'un Elohim avol im ein habayis habezdin mechayav en oso ein chayav klal. But so what Howard expressed about a half hour ago is that only after a maisa bezdin does he have the unequivocal right to do this. Bezdin will give the order. Okay, you owe him $75 for the damage you caused his sheep, right? And if after a gzar din, after, come on, he's dragging his leg. Pay me already. The bezdin ordered you. It's not like the bezdin goes into his bank account and takes it out. The bezdin says you owe it. And then he's not paying up. Only then can the guy come and take. That's a separate shita, but we don't paskin that way. We paskin that in Choshen Mishpat Chelakal, Simon Aleph, that he can go in at any time. Right? And then the owner becomes now possibly an aggrieved party, and he has the right recourse to go back. Okay. All right, I think this is, I don't think it's any reason more to go into Dina Knasos too much more, because we're not living at a time where we can have Knas. The only relevant thing is for today is that the person who's a victim of the Knas, right, he has the right to for some kind of redress. Okay, Chevra. Next Monday night, I'm very happy to announce that my plan is to give shiur at shul.
Oh, nice.
The 9 o'clock shiur is going to, 8 o'clock shiur is going to be on Megillat Esther. And the 9 o'clock shiur next week is, I'm going to give in, Parsha Zohar. There are three mitzvahs of Parsha Zohar. One, Zechiras HaMalik. Two, Al Tishkach Amalek. And three, Lahachris Zar'o Shel Amalek. And we'll discuss all three of those in Yetzir Shem next week.
So can we attend in Shul?
Yes, attend in Shul. And there will be a Zoom option as well, in case you want to stay at home. But I do very much hope that we can pull it off. And maybe we'll have a 9 o'clock Maariv. There won't be an 8 o'clock Maariv because we changed the clock. And the regular Maariv is it's 7. So so good. So I look forward very much to that, as I'm looking forward to returning as much as possible. And I look forward to seeing you then.